Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And today's guest, okay, and I'm going to bring out a sports analogy. So I remember when Michael Jordan, somebody was like actually talking to Michael Jordan saying, hey, I can take you or whatever. Michael Jordan put up the six fingers saying he had six championships. When the Memphis Grizzlies were talking to Klay Thompson, obviously changed teams now, Klay Thompson put up four fingers. So let's hypothetically say I was like saying, Rachel, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Rachel will give me the five fingers, meaning she's an author of five books. So there's the equivalency. But today's guest, one of the experts across, not just across the country, but across the world, globally, with regards to artificial intelligence, CTE integration with innovation and AI, understanding the importance of technical skill development to be complementary with the AI evolution. I would like to introduce Ms. Rachel Mann, who is the CEO, executive director of EdFuture, and yes, author of five, not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. But I had to do that. I love when I love when Michael Jordan and Klay Thompson did that. That is, and Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant did five as well. Kobe, so you're in a really, really illustrious group, Rachel, but so good to have this level of expertise. Rachel, I consider you one of the czars across the country, across the world with regards to CTE. So it is just an absolute honor to have you on the show. Thank you.
Dr. Connor, it is an honor to be here. And now, from now on, anytime I see you, I'm just going to be doing this. That's going to be my thing. No, it truly, truly is an honor. And thank you. It's great to be on another podcast with you and have another exciting conversation.
Selfishly, Rachel, this is just me just trying to unpack your intellectual property so I can become smarter and learn. Every time I listen to you, Rachel, whether it be a podcast, I heard snippets of your last keynote in Ohio. Wow, so much relevancy in the context of change of practice for the 22nd century. But moreover, just you bring in this level of intellectual vitality in the context of change with regards to AI and AI readiness. So, Rachel, this is just going to be, hopefully we'll limit it to 60 minutes and under, but the way that we go on, it can go on for 2 hours, but we'll keep it confined for our audience. But Rachel, I want to ask this first question, because this first question, everybody knows your expertise. Everybody knows your message when you go keynoting around the world, but this is a fun question so that my audience get to know you, Miss Rachel Mann. So many educators and leaders have know you across the country, a strategist in education, an innovator with regards to CTE for 22nd century development, and unwrapping not your one, two, three, four, but five books. What song describes your work in the education ecosystem?
Oh, boy. Now, at first, I want to mention that I listen to podcasts so much that I rarely listen to music anymore. So this is going to go way back to the way back days of when I listened to music all the time. And I don't know if you remember the book by Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh, yeah.
Called Unwritten. Mm-hmm. That song to me really embodies, as I really am working primarily in artificial intelligence these days and emerging trends and technology that are impacting the CTE field. And so much of it is unwritten. When we think about what's happening in the future of education, I like to reference a napkin sketch, because we're so early in embedding AI into the next steps, the next phases, that it's so unwritten. There's so much more to come. And the decisions we make now are what's going to add color to that napkin sketch and flesh out everything that's next. What an exciting time to be in education, especially CTE, where we truly are shaping the future. We've always shaped the future within education, but the future's in the classrooms, and what they're learning, what they're doing is going to shape humanity moving forward.
Absolutely. I love how, first of all, yes, I don't know if you remember, but that song by, or the song Unwritten, do you remember the show Laguna Beach? That's all I remember. It was Unwritten, the song. It was in Laguna Beach, MTV, a while ago. So I'm dating myself as well. But
I'm gonna have to go back and review Laguna Beach, so.
yeah, so I guess that my viewers now know I used to watch Laguna Beach on MTV. But yes, you're so right with the alignment with AI and these emergent trends and the emergent technologies and the sophistication of the data sets that's making the AI, the machine learning, much more sophisticated. I remember I was reading something that Rachel, that I believe they have avatars out now with because of the data sets that can emulate the human behavior by 90%. So you can create your own avatar, ASI generative features as we're talking about. But yes, that whole context of CTE and shaping the future. And you're right, Rachel. CTE has been shaping the future for a very long time. It's a travesty that it took a pandemic for the whole education sector to realize the critical importance and the underlying imperative notions that CTE bring to our economy. I always like to say now, college ready, career readiness, and digital readiness, but career and digital readiness with the emphasis because of the new economic demand that we are facing moving into the 22nd century. I don't know if you've been doing this, Rachel, but I've been trying to strategically, intentionally change the vernacular of our education leaders and practitioners to move out of saying 21st century and move towards 22nd century because we are in the latter stages of the 21st century. And again, if we continue to prepare ourselves or prepare students for the 21st century, there's still that level of stagnation where the gap can be exacerbated with regards to preparing our students. But congratulations on your just released book. Now you got five, okay? So, I mean, you got your point guard, you got your shooting guard, you got your power forward. I mean, you got your small forward. Now with positionless basketball, you just got five books. But congratulations. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, your new book, your newly released book is entitled Pack Your Bags for an AI-Driven Future, AI in Education. Correct? That's the book, right? That's
That
the
is
book.
correct.
Right.
That
All
is
right.
the correct
So that's the free agent signing that you just signed
title.
to
There
add
you
it on to the team. But
go.
you have four other books that have impacted education in totality, specifically around various verticals in education. One, can you identify the themes and the core levers of your book, or of your books, I should say? And two, this most recent book, Pack Your Bags for an AI-Driven Future, AI and Education. Because this is such a hot topic in education, can you unwrap the themes in a siloed manner for that book for my audience?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when it comes down to it, all of my books have a theme of preparing young people for their future. The first book that I wrote, The Martians in Your Classroom, it evolves around the whole concept that the first person to step foot on Mars has most likely been born and could be a student in your classroom. So you could be teaching the first Martian. That's pretty exciting. Now, I co-authored this with Stephen Sanford from NASA, and it evolves around the theme of incorporating STEM in every learning space. And when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, CTE is STEM. There's a hashtag, CTE is STEM, because there's so much STEM in everything we do within CTE. But more than just thinking of the students in your classroom of potentially living and working on another planet, the world that they're growing up in is so different than the world that you and I grew up in, that it might as well be a different planet altogether. So how do we look at education differently when we're thinking about how different the world is for them already, and the future that we're equipping them for is completely, vastly different than the future that we're living in now. So it changes the dynamics of how we do education. So how do we equip them for that future? And then from there, when I looked at the statistics for the number of females and minorities going into STEM-related fields, that was something that was unfortunate. And so I decided that when we think about motivating young ladies at a young age to start thinking of and seeing themselves in STEM-related fields, how do we do that? Well, at the time in 2020 or 2019. Oof. Yeah, 2019, when the book came out, there were very few children's books around women in STEM. So The Spaces You'll Go has Cass and her little sidekick, Kanga Blue, exploring 17 different space-related careers just to create that emphasis on what do you envision yourself as? What are the possibilities? Like most girls don't think of themselves as being a mechanic or possibly a space engineer or these different fields that are in that book. And then the second is Cass and her new friend Tilly. They're exploring 24 different agriculture careers and looking at the STEM side of that. From there, I wrote a book for ACTE on CTSO competition readiness with a lot of emphasis on communication skills. But the one that I just wrote is the hardest book that I've written. Pack Your Bags for an AI-Driven Future, because I kept changing it because the world of AI keeps changing so fast. So trying to really identify that evergreen concepts that every educator needs to know as we move into this AI-driven world, but also highlighting some of the really cool things happening now and the forecasts of what's coming next. It was so much fun, but it's a field that's just ever changing and ever growing.
Rachel, there was a lot to unpack specifically around the themes. I want to underscore a specific data metric I saw as well. The our current right now construct in education, the way that is designed, specifically curriculum articulation, priorities, emphasis with certain content areas, specifically at the elementary level, where a lot of the time is dedicated to literacy and numeracy because of this, right? And again, it's no individual or one leader or leaders to blame around this, but it's around the construct of the model. Only 6% of our students are being introduced to computer science, which ultimately is going to be the future of the world. When we talk about women STEM in education, right now, women in STEM-related jobs, Rachel, it is malfeasance. 1.8% the last time that I saw. 1.8%. So when we think about introduction to these AI sciences or AI sciences and STEM related fields, and right now the current construct of the operating model is only facilitating 6% of introductory or some type of awareness around computer science, one. And then two, when we see the outputs, where we're seeing AI science jobs, STEM-related jobs, a little under 2%. Now, based off of those metrics, right? And again, not looking at it from a corollary standpoint or a causality, but just more of a observatory business scan analysis, we need to be able to put an emphasis on women in STEM and AI-related jobs, because as you stated, Rachel, that is the future. Generation Z and Generation Alpha. Rachel, this is kind of like a sub question, right? When we talk about some of those disparities that we see, women in STEM-related jobs, AI-driven jobs, psychometricians, the manufacturing CTE jobs that are going to be heavily weighted in the future of work. How do we now aggressively start eliminating those disparities specifically? Women in these jobs and introduction at the foundational level, PK-12, PK-20 level, where we're ensuring that, hey, a Rachel Mann gets to embark or embrace and upon these related STEM-related jobs in a VR manner, hypothetically, let's say that.
It really comes down to what we're putting before young people. You think about them ha as having a blank slate, and we're shaping their minds. What are the books that they're reading? What are the children's books? Who are the im What are the images that they are embedding in their minds as what these careers look like? And then also, what are the toys that they're playing with? Play is learning, and I think we sometimes forget the importance of play in education. So, how do we make sure that we're not perpetuating these stereotypes by having females playing with dolls, boys playing with more of your engineering toys and building and constructing things so that they are developing strong minds in every area on both sides of the equation and have a more holistic view, but also breaking down the stereotypes of a job that is a female job or a male job. You know, that's important to think about is really letting them know that they can be anything. You know, I think about when I was a kid, I thought that I could be a stay-at-home mom, a teacher, or a nurse. That was pretty much the three career paths where I lived and the community and the mindset that I was living in. And the stay-at-home mom was probably the one that was most prevalent. So, you know, according to those standards, I'm a huge failure with with the routes that I've chosen and selected. But it is something to where we show young people that they can do anything. When
Absolutely.
you have something that needs fixed, are you just going to the male students and saying, "Hey, can you see if you can put this back together for us?"
Right.
You're perpetuating that stereotype. So
Sure.
I think
Yeah.
that's make it, when you think about the younger ages, and then also who are the role models you're bringing in? Who
Absolutely.
are you bringing in to talk about these career paths? How do you make sure that, you know, connecting with organizations such as Girls in STEM and just emphasizing that what young people can do regardless of who they are, what they look like, you know, which sex they are.
And Rachel, one thing, and I'm glad you're bringing that up because, you know that when I'm in these environments, whether it be statisticians, I like to say I live in two worlds with my educators, you know, of the world, my superintendents, my executive leaders, teachers, principals, and then there's the world that EdTech world I live in, right? With all these really, really, really smart statisticians putting together these models, psychometricians. But when I enter, and I say this all the time, Rachel, when I enter different environments, whether it be the education environment or this environment around big data analytics, psychometricians, normally I just see just the status quo. And with the statisticians, data scientists, right? I don't see many women. I don't see many people of color. And every time that I get a chance to say this, I'm like, how are we disrupt this room? Because just by the development or the design of these models, we already tell that there's biases that's going to be embedded in there because we don't have women representing in the model with development of the actual model, me being the only voice to be able to present some type of statistical chasm because of, you know, I'm bringing in my experiences. We need more of that. So I'm trying to penetrate that, I like to say vertical strategically. So there's representation of people of color and women simultaneously. But you know that, Rachel, because you live in those environments as well.
Well, and it's interesting even thinking about, so this summer, last summer was my first summer living in Hershey, Pennsylvania, having moved from Phoenix, where we have turf or sand in our yards, having 3 acres of land to take care of. Last summer, I didn't have time to deal with it. I hired my neighbor to come over and mow. This summer, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to live here, I'm going to take care of my own land. So first thing I do is order a Mimotion robot. And I'm like that, I'm gonna have the robot take care of the steep side of the property, and then I'll use a riding lawnmower for the rest of it, and have a push mower for some of the corners and whatnot. And I get the robot, and I start looking at all the YouTube videos. Everything is white men. And I thought, what a missed opportunity. You're basically saying to females that you don't have the ability to put together a robot. We're not even going to include you because apparently you don't take care of your own land if you're a female. And I actually sent them a message about it. I'm like, hey, this is a missed opportunity because how many women would like to have something like this and are maybe intimidated that they're going to have to put it together and figure it out on their own? Having a female representative, that's huge. So it's interesting the messages that are unintended. You know, it's no one intended to be offensive when they put those videos out there. They thought that that was their target audience, but maybe it's time to change that target audience.
Absolutely. Disrupting mindsets, Rachel. That's what we're here to do.
Absolutely. Let's do
Let's
it.
do it. High five on that. But Rachel, I'm gonna go into another question, right? You've been keynoting everywhere. I can't follow you no more. I mean, stop, really. Like, live on a plane. But you have been speaking about AI. You've been speaking about AI and education across the country. But as you engage with different educators and leaders, how do we truly, now authentically and truly, address AI readiness, AI capabilities, and moreover, kind of like what we were alluding to, AI ethics to ensure that the ecosystem is creating an experience that is in alignment to the broader economic demand that Generation Z and Generation Alpha will encounter in their everyday life experience? Because you and I know we can't keep underscoring the same model while explicitly and implicitly exacerbating many, many readiness variables, specifically on preparing our students for the future of work and the future of the world.
What a great question. So the first thing that I think about as we look at an AI-driven future is how are we equipping our educators? So I've seen some states sending out surveys that are statewide surveys. They want everyone to have a seat at the table. So they're sending out this survey to everyone in the state asking for feedback on their AI implementation guides or state plans or toolkits, whatever they're putting together. While I appreciate them inviting everyone to have a voice in this, they've got it backwards. You cannot expect people to be able to give an educated input on these plans when you haven't provided them with the training. And I keep hearing teachers saying that they haven't received training yet, that they've asked to go to get training and they're not getting the training. So how can they really speak to the subject when they're not getting the training first? So that's the first thing. But then also, students are afraid to talk to their students and parents about artificial intelligence, whether it's their fears about AI, their just curiosity about AI, because so many people equate artificial intelligence right now with cheating. The students feel like if they ask the question, then someone's going to think that they're using it to cheat. So I did an event. I had my first speaking engagement that was to high school students on AI. So far, I'm only talking to adults on AI, and I was so excited that I got invited to talk to incoming high school seniors about artificial intelligence. Now, when they got there, they thought that they were going to be told all about the dangers of cheating, getting themselves in trouble with AI. So I think they were a little surprised when right off the bat, I had them pull out their phones to train a neural network and do a little activity around that. And they're like, oh, we're learning about how artificial intelligence works. And some of the questions that I got after the keynote were interesting because the students were sharing some of their fears that, AI is going to take their jobs. The student said, how is this a good thing? This is so scary. And they have all these fears inside because no one is talking to them about it. So we've got to make sure that our educators are getting the training so that they can have these conversations with students. And then also that our community is being trained as well. I was talking to a gal on the plane and she asked about what work I do. And I was talking about artificial intelligence. And she's like, oh, I already told my daughter she's going to be a freshman in college this year. Don't use it. There's detection tools. And don't get yourself in trouble. Wow, is that what we're equating AI to right now? Because first of all, the detection tools don't work, but that's a whole nother conversation. But that's the limited view that we have. And I was listening to a podcast earlier today. It was an interview with Bill Gates. And who better, regardless of how you feel about Bill Gates, who better to talk about AI? And something that he said that really struck me was that right off the bat, he said that this was the biggest thing out there right now. I'm like, wow. And then he went on to say, and I actually wrote it down, it's absolutely the most important thing going on, and it will shape humanity in a very dramatic way. And he talks about how it's integrated with synthetic biology, robotics, and I think a lot of people are feeling like we're overestimating AI. And we're underestimating it. This needs,
Absolutely.
if this is the biggest thing happening right now, and we're barely touching the surface of it in education, we've got to do better. We've got to get on this. There's a lot of work that needs to happen to be ready. The ethics thing, I know there was multiple parts to that question. I don't want to miss one of the most important aspects of artificial intelligence. Ethics is huge because it's covering so many different things. How do we ensure that we're not making the same mistakes that we've made in the past when there have been huge technological advances where we have further marginalized already marginalized groups? And that's what could happen in a very real way if we're not ensuring that everyone has access. If it's something to where we have our rich kids and our rich schools who have access to these tools and we're further marginalizing, then we're truly going to create a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots. And that's scary. But then also looking at it from a community standpoint, and if I'm going down a rabbit hole too much, let me know. I get very excited about this stuff.
There's Rachel, there is no rabbit hole in VFH.
But I worry about when you think about jobs. Yes, jobs are going to be replaced and jobs are going to be created. But if we have moms and dads and people in our community who are working three jobs, they have no idea that any of those three jobs are at risk of redundancy because of artificial intelligence and robotics and other tech advances. They're not going to have time to upskill. They're not going to have time to get that second set of knowledge that they need by going to community colleges, taking classes. So even if there are more jobs being created, it's going to happen too fast. So how do we, as an education community, make sure that we're taking care of the larger community by offering adult education classes, but also creating an awareness? I was in Let's see, I think I was in San Francisco or outside of San Francisco a few months ago and was talking to my Uber driver about driverless cars. And he kind of laughed and like made a joke about the Jetsons. And I'm like, oh no, it's already here. I was in Phoenix a couple of months ago and rode in Waymos for 2 weeks the entire time I was there. He didn't believe me. I had to pull out when we stopped, pull out my phone and show him a video of me driving in a driverless car in a Waymo. And it was that moment when you realize that there are people who could lose their jobs to automation and to AI that don't know what's coming. So that's a pretty big ethical issue too. And there are so many ethical issues. We can talk about how about the dangers of it. You know, if AI is can take a 30-second recording of my voice because I said hello, hello, hello on a phone. And now be able to replicate it and call a school and say that they're in my voice that Uncle Joe is picking up my child from school today, or convince grandma to put money in my account. You know, so many other things that we have good players and bad players in AI. And how do we make sure that the young people in our learning spaces are equipped to be the good players, but also to protect themselves against the bad players in artificial intelligence?
Rachel, profound your answer, right? Because that I like to say, not just from a meta theme, but this is a mega theme, building capacity around the various tenets of this very broad domain with a variety of different, well, a high level of abstraction of AI that we know, right? Because I always like to say pedagogy, andragogy, very, very similar, right? Pedagogy, I like to say, is the art of teaching, obviously for our students, but andragogy, that adult learning, right? How are we being strategic about building capacity where there's that alignment, creating that shared mental model around AI? Yes, right. I was just at an AI event in New York, with Alex Cotran and many other people that AIEDU had put on. And one of the conversations or the discussion points were talking about AI ethics and building capacity with our students on how to be able to use it. I remember, I can't remember. Yeah, I remember it was San Antonio, and I believe it was in California, where I was speaking to two different sets of groups, and the students were laughing at us, saying that we're not using AI to cheat, like to help us, yeah, to give us ideas, absolutely, to see if, we need to make changes within our papers around punctuation, wordsmithing, yeah, but they're like actually cheating No, so that could just be an adult misnomer that we've created with regards to students with AI. With that, but that whole upskilling piece is so critical. Rachel, I saw a study from Morgan Stanley stating that at least 10 to 15% of the knowledge-based work moving forward by 2035 will be eliminated. That is a lot. That is a
Yeah.
lot. So it kind of underscores this next question around CTE and innovative pathways, preparing our students, right? Technical preparation in alignment with this AI revolution in the AC stage of education. Objectively, yes, this continuous evolution of AI and economy, we're seeing this emphasis around technical skill development and this de-emphasis on linear knowledge-based attainment for college readiness. Subjectively, we need to prioritize this in education. Now, with your expertise, Rachel, right? We know that the linchpin behind this radical shift is AI and the generative platforms. There's this innovation paradox, I like to say, between interfacing AI and CTE. So, as one of the global czars, Rachel, where would leaders start when designing innovative pathways around or in alignment to the new market demand? And second, how do I innovate and redesign existing pathways to have this strategic intersection with AI and other emerging technologies so that I am now preparing my students for career and digital readiness? Not forgetting college readiness, but there's a de-emphasis based off a myriad of studies and data that we are seeing today.
First of all, this global czar thing, I'm going to start when someone asks me to speak and asks for a bio. I'm just going to add that in. Thank you. I'm flattered. Okay. So I'm actually going to answer that in reverse because I think that the more important aspect is transforming our current landscapes and getting our educators up to speed. So I think that working with each of your different career clusters, pathways, programs to embed AI and show what it looks like in that field, that's going to be important. And at the beginning of June, I was doing a workshop with an awesome group of very lively CTE educators. And one of them said immediately, "Hey, by the way, I am a welder. So none of this applies to me, but they're paying me to be here, so I'm here." And I'm like, oh, I'm so excited that today, because I get to blow your mind. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right, but thanks for being here. Hopefully you're not bored today. And then we start the first activity because there were several people who haven't used AI yet. And I go back and I'm like, hey, so ChatGPT, you don't need to log in or anything. Why don't you ask ChatGPT? You have to have subs sometime, right? And he's like, oh yeah, of course. I'm like, why don't you ask ChatGPT if it can write 3 days worth of lesson plans for you around what's a topic in construction that kids can do without using tools? So he's like, oh, math and construction. So I'm like, yeah, let's do a 3 day lesson plan and see what it comes up with. He is mind blown by this and by construction and welding, by the way. So he's talking, so we're looking at the construction side of it and mind blown. And it was one of those things where it was such a paradigm shift as we're going throughout the day and looking at and using different tools to be able to see how it's changing construction, you know, looking at how it's, and it's not going to be AI replacing construction workers. Obviously, we need those skills, and those skills are irreplaceable, but it is going to be something to where AI is going to be assisting with their work. It's going to impact their work. It's going to impact your role as an educator, regardless of any subject matter you teach. So I think that having professional development to where each content area is really looking at how AI is shaping the future, meeting with advisory committees to see what they're seeing in the workplace and making sure you have the right people on those advisory committees, because
Absolutely.
that, you got to make sure that the people who know what the trends are part of advising. But that's going to be really crucial. I think also looking at it from the perspective of you may want to look at having a global advisory. So think about advisory committees. So how can you pull in some folks from different time zones and parts of the world so that we can even think about how the job market's shifting for students who may be working remotely or in a hybrid or a distributed workforce and have a boss on the other side of the globe while they're still contributing to the local economy. So, thinking about some of those things too. But yeah, so looking at career paths that you have now, what does AI look like in each of those areas? But also, if we're going to add more things to teachers' plates, we've got to make sure we're taking things off their plate.
Absolutely.
What are the things you
Absolutely.
don't need to teach anymore?
Absolutely.
Because you're working on this AI side of it, and those skills may look different, and this isn't going to be so important in the future. So we need to take some of those lessons out of our curriculum as we're adding more things in around artificial intelligence. But I think that,
Rachel,
yes.
if I can interject,
Of
because
course.
and I never interject with when my guests are speaking, but this is important, right? What to take off. I would like I think when we say what to take off, sometimes we have a hard time, it's arduous identifying what to actually take off, right? Because when we start eliminating or moving away from some of the historical nodes of education, the batched industrialization of these tenets that we're used to, right? Traditional curriculum, traditional pedagogical approaches, traditional structures, instructional systems that continue to be operationalized as if we still are in the BC stage of education before COVID. When we start evaluating and assessing what to take off, to now replace it with the new demand in education, how can we now evaluate that of what to take off to replace with these new practices and methodologies?
That is such an important question, and it looks different for every subject area, every content area, and within CTE within each pathway. And I think that it can't be a one size fits all piece. It's something that really requires, especially in CTE, involving your advisory committees, having them look at the curriculum, what you're teaching, what is it that's not relevant. When you think about, and I'm not a finance teacher, so please do not, if you're a finance teacher, please do not, if this is something you teach, take this personally. But I think about someone who owns my own business. I have my own checkbooks in years. Are finance classes still teaching kids how to write checks? And if so, is it looking at it from the perspective of working in a corporation where you might still have handwritten checks? Making sure that you're really thinking through, is this the skill set that's right now? Are you using ledgers, paper ledgers, versus using some teaching them how to use QuickBooks or even Xero, which is a newer platform? Having them learn about Venmo and electronic payment methods that may not be being taught, which are part AI driven. So looking at some of those things, or thinking about in language arts, I had a language arts teacher share with me how she had moved to a new school and loved teaching about the Dewey Decimal System and the card catalog. And so she does her lesson and then takes the kids on a field trip down to the library. And she got to the library and there was no card catalog. Everything is digitized. And she realized that, oh, wow, I need to modernize my lessons. I need to rethink my lessons and let go of I think it's Stephen King who says, kill your darlings. And it's hard to let go. Sometimes we have those
It
favorite lessons, and it's so hard to let go of them.
is.
But sometimes we have to kill our darlings in education, looking at it from a writer's standpoint. And so I taught for many years, and I was moving when I started teaching and went into my first classroom. I go into this big pantry. It was a culinary arts class. Go into this big pantry, and there were canned foods that had expired 10 years earlier. I mean, there were boxes and boxes of materials and worksheets and lesson plans that the person, I'm sure it was in good intention that they left this stuff for the next teacher, but it was old, it was dated. So I had a lot of cleaning up to do to get rid of that stuff. So after teaching for 10 years in Northern Virginia, moving out to Arizona, I'm like, you know what? I never want to be that teacher. I'm going to do something really bold and scary. I'm going to leave all of my materials behind. And I did. And so when I first started teaching in Arizona, I was teaching sixth grade science, and then I was teaching culinary and technology, and teaching these different subjects. And at times when I was still teaching some culinary classes, I'm like, oh, why did I do that? Why did I leave all that stuff behind? But it forced me to think outside the box and really evaluate what were those important things that I needed to bring with me, and then some of them that just weren't as relevant anymore. So letting go of some of the older things while holding on to some of those pieces that were still critical moving forward.
Rachel, I love how you contextualize that immediately, letting go some of the darlings. Because I'll tell you this, my son was with me one time, right? And give you kind of like a context prerequisite. He's building a specific code around his game that he can be able to move his certain players from one space to another, operationalizing that, right? Being able to now kind of problem solve and think through, where to address some of the errors within his code to make sure that, he's having that right clean data. So that aspect of it. But when I was writing a check, he was like, "Papa, what is that?" And I was like, "Oh, it's a check." And he was like, "Oh, you mean a check to with money?" And I'm like, "Yeah. Oh, why aren't you using Cash App or Venmo?" So now, just that context right there tells you that the model has to change, right?
Yes.
Just that context right there tells you that the model has to change. And kind of going back to your earlier sentiments, it was a quote from one of my professors at Harvard, Kareem Lakhani, who wrote the book Competing in the World of AI. And his quote is, "AI won't replace humans, but humans with AI will replace humans without AI." And when
Yes.
I start to think about that now, right, that whole skill, competency, technical development, the importance, the grounded importance now of CTE and interfacing with AI is inevitable. I mean, we're seeing kids. I remember, Rachel, your teacher, when my first year of teaching, I thought I was rich, $33,000. Now we're seeing high school students that are graduating with technical skills and certifications, where at 18, 19, they're making $119,000, $120,000 at 18, at 19. I was super excited with my first teaching job, making $33,000 at 23. So that's what I'm talking about, preparing students and the importance, the critical importance, both objectively and subjectively around CTE and innovation. But leading into this next question, Rachel, when I got you, I'm going to pour on the questions because I know your level of expertise. But two words in this AC stage of education: innovation and creativity, right? We know they're needed levers to develop skills and competencies for the future of work. These words, innovation and creativity, to me, when now you can throw in AI around this triangulation, they're very loosely defined, right? Because it becomes contextual to the actual learning environment or where you're at across the country, to the level of where now we have to look at this from this broad context where we have to be able to have some type of definition of innovation and equity. I like to say that, I'm sorry, innovation and creativity, where now where there's this line of multiple definitions for rigor. Remember when academic rigor, everybody had a definition for that? Now
Yes.
everybody has a definition for innovation, creativity, and I want to throw in AI in there. But in your words, Rachel, for level setting with my BFE audience, define innovation and creativity to reach the design that is needed for a model where students are authentically engaged, not strategically compliant, where now Generation Alpha is being what I like to say, Rick, there's this level of ritual compliance, right? But how do we truly get our students authentically engaged in the learning process?
So I think that we should avoid trying to define it for education as a whole, because just as it varies for different institutions on how they define it, it also it varies in different contexts when it comes to business and industry. when you look at innovation and creativity at the, since I'm in Hershey, Pennsylvania, I'll say the Hershey Chocolate Factory here, versus looking at electric vehicles and working an engineering teacher preparing kids for working on electric vehicles or even building electric vehicles. It's going to look so different in those different fields. So really thinking about what is the definition for that field individually? And then shaping education as we're equipping kids for those fields around that. But also keeping in mind too that the words are changing because of artificial intelligence. I saw this video the other day that blew my mind, and it was someone within the graphic design industry using AI to create this video, and it was so cool. Everything that their arm touched turned into what they were touching. So they touched this orange vase. Their arm turned. Did you post this video? Was this your
No,
video? Oh,
no,
okay. All right. I just had that moment of like, wait, maybe I saw it on your
no.
thread.
No, it wasn't my video, Rachel. Listen, if I get a product point, yes, it is my
I
video.
want to make sure I give credit where credit's due. So they touch this orange vase and their arm, just the orange glossiness goes up their arm. Then they touch a pine cone and suddenly you see the pine cone growing up their arm. They touch a pink velvet seat. Everything becomes the pink material. And it was so creative and so cool. But what we define as creativity within the arts field is changing in a huge way because of artificial intelligence. Same thing with innovation with AI. There are things that are going to be invented and solutions that come out because people are able to prompt engineer the right questions to get AI to come up with something that no one's thought of before. You know, that's already happening when we look at the way that they're using it to come up with new formulas for drugs and medicine and different things within the medical field. So it's going to be a wild ride moving forward. And I think that we're going to see less and less absolutes. Things are going to be more fluid.
Absolutely. I love that. And that's that whole business process design of moving away from the static processes that we see in education to more dynamic, that's iterative, adaptive in nature, i.e., moving away from the standardized traditional education system to, I like to say, inclusive learning ecosystem where students are and families are the co-designers. But absolutely right. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, no. So I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that's something else that we have to remember within education. We are very keen to move towards, okay, is it evidence-based? You know, how do we make sure this works? And in the future, as much as we want things to be evidence-based, we're going to have to change fast. When you look at a linear world versus an exponential world, I
Absolutely.
heard Peter Diamandis talk about how if you take 30 linear steps, you've gone 30 steps, you know, you've gone across a building. If you take 30 exponential steps, you've gone around the world 26.2 times. And Ray Kurzweil, the futurist Ray Kurzweil, he says it like this: we're going to see as much progress in the next decade as what we've seen in the last century. Wrap your mind around that. I mean, that's some serious progress. And education, which in some ways has been traditionally slow to evolve, not on any fault of educators, but more on the bureaucracy and being, you know, state funded and government federally funded. It's something you have a lot of processes, but how do we create an environment to where we can even model to our students making mistakes? Because we're going to have to change quickly. And sometimes you're going to be learning with the students this new tool. Of course, you're going to make sure it's COPPA and FERPA compliant and whatnot. But there's going to be times where you're learning together and you're the facilitator versus just that person who is the expert in that realm. So being able to both have an environment to where we're encouraging people to take some risks and do some new things and to create that evidence. That's going to be a huge paradigm shift within the education realm.
And Rachel, I love how you're bringing up this new, I like to say, academic registrar in education, right? Where words of like experimentation, risk analyses, and risk management was always pushed back. But I think COVID has accelerated us to be able to now look at the business sciences practices and also the computational science practices. and integrate them or interface them into education strategically. But again, the acceleration because of the pandemic now is kind of like you're right, going back to your earlier sentiments, is how do we build shared capability, shared capacity around AI? We're just at the foundational level of understanding applications, but we need to come to the broader level of how does this look like in design so that these accelerators, these learning ecosystems that are operationalized as if they're R&D environments to truly prepare our students, because binary and absolute, as you stated, is going to become obsolete, where we have to embrace the, I like to say, dissonance of this design and education. And you know, as educators, Rachel, you and I, we don't like to feel comfortably uncomfortable.
We want to be the expert. We want to know the answers, and we have to be okay with co-learning.
I like to say, the intellectual banter around theory, around practices, around evidence-based practices, they are going to be challenged with this new notion of AI and science. I love how you said that innovation and creativity, the definition, is going to be disrupted because of AI. Rachel, last question. You made it through VFE. Listen, you have me on the hot seat with your responses. But Rachel, I don't know if I can limit you to three words, but just let me try, right? We 90%, and again, this is a very loose metric, but roughly about 90% don't listen or follow the quote unquote directions. They're disruptors on this last question. So, Rachel, as I tell everybody that comes on VFE, take it as it is. What three words? I laugh every time when I say this because all the people that I interview, they just smile at me and they give me that look like, really? Three words? But what three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast regarding an innovative and disruptive education model in the AC stage of education?
Well, I'm going to do two hashtags.
No, this is new on VFB. Hashtags, go right ahead.
Hashtag do not panic. There's no spaces. And hashtag pack your bags.
Technically, that's six, but okay, we'll put two
There's no
hashtags.
spaces.
Your bags. Please elaborate on those two hashtags.
This is scary, and I was teaching a college class for a university and on artificial intelligence, and the sense of panic was real. This is something that's scary, it's disruptive, it changes the way we view our everything that we've been doing in education. It's scary. So focused on one thing at a time. Don't think of everything at once, changing everything at once, because that's too much. Educators are already overworked. If you're an education leader, how are you providing support for your educators through some of these transitions? Possibly hiring additional staff. I know that's a whole budget issue, but do not panic. So important. We're all in it together. The whole world's changing faster than any technology has ever changed. You think about huge technological changes and advances. This is so much bigger, and we are all underestimating what it looks like. But at the same time, don't let it become overwhelming. Don't quit. We need good educators. Even if your kids are graduating and making more money, we got to fix that formula too. And then for pack your bags, that comes from pack your bags for an AI-driven future. What is it that you need for the future? What is it that are absolutes that you're taking with you that makes it in that bag? What are the things that aren't important in the future, like we talked about before, that don't make it into the bag? And then what are the things you need to add? What are the additions that you need so that you're ready for that AI-driven future?
Miss Rachel Mann, hashtag do not panic and hashtag pack your bags. But what you failed to mention is that's the name of your book too, Pack Your Bags. So that you gotta get that. Listen, Rachel, that is right there. That right there is genius thinking. Two hashtags, six words, but put it in cut. There
No
you go.
spaces, two hashtags.
No excuses with that, Rachel. It has been an absolute honor. If my audience wants to get in contact with you, How would they be able to reach out to you? Further questions regarding CTE, your books, or the work that you're doing in AI?
Absolutely. Please do get in touch because I always love being able to connect with more people around my favorite topic, CTE and AI. Well, dogs, but no, we'll stick with AI and CTE. But you can reach me through my website, edfuture.org, or on social media at RachelEDU. Just make sure you include two A's, RachelEDU, or you can email me at rachel@edfuture.org.
Rachel, it has been an absolute honor to have you on VFE. Listen, you're in Hershey, so I got to stay away from Hershey because I have the worst sweet tooth and AI or anything. No. I'm going to the park to get some chocolate.
Hey, you will work it off walking around that park. It's hot, it's humid, and there's lots of walking that happens. You'll be fine.
I'll be fine with that, Rachel. Again, it's such an honor to have you on VFE. Continue to be the voice in education because your work that you're doing is so imperative and is paramount to make the necessary changes in the ecosystem.
Dr. Connor, thank you for having me. It's been a blast, and the honor is all mine.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.